This is Philippa Ballantyne, the voice of Gloria Platt and author of the new podcast novel, Chasing the Bard. If you want to hear more of P.G. Holyfield, catch him playing the part of my King of the Fairies, Lord Oberon, at chasingthebard.com. But right now, you're listening to episode 20 of Murder at Avedon Hill.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Avedon Hill, The Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 20 of Murder at Avedon Hill. I had a great intro all ready to go for this episode, but of course that was for an episode that should have been released about a week and a half ago. A lot of things have changed. I went to Walt Disney World for 4 days with the family. It was my 40th birthday yesterday, so I didn't get the episode out until today. Episode 20 is chapters 18 and 19. I won't go into all the guest voices that will appear. Please check the show notes for that. And the website. There's one new page on the website right now for the music, and I'll be adding a couple more pages, expanding information on the characters page and adding a page for some stuff I've been doing over at bitstrips.com. But we're just going to go ahead and get right into the chapter. One thing I did want to mention was I've made a couple of appearances, one a single appearance in a short story over at variantfrequencies.com called Texas Last Run, and I am doing a voice for Philippa Ballantyne's Chasing the Bard podcast. I am playing Oberon, the king of the fairy realm, and you can check that out at chasingthebard.com. I recommend this podcast highly. Read the book last year, and it is translating perfectly into the audio form. And Pip's doing a great job, so please check it out at chasingthebard.com. But right now, it is time for the story. And skipping a story so far, check the show notes for that. We're getting right into chapter 18 and 19 of Murder at Avedon Hill. Enjoy. Episode 20 of Murder at Avedon Hill.
Chapter 18, The Mark of Aj. The icon of Kaylee, the child of magic. And Kaylee, silent for generations, will appear and aid us at the end of the day. Third Collected Prophecies of Iberian, Book 1, Chapter 5.
While there were farms near the town walls that may have been busy preparing for the impending winter, this activity apparently did not affect traffic on Avedon Hill's main streets. Aramis Cragan and Aaron Pertee made their way back to the gates of Avedon Manor without crossing paths with anyone. It's just eerie, Aaron thought to himself. It's like they know something bad is coming. Or is already here. Aramis was surprised to see Constable Lewis with a young girl perched on his back, her arms wrapped tightly around the constable's neck. The girl laughed as Lewis extricated her from his back and set her gently on the ground.
Stand up straight, Julianne. You need to meet our esteemed guests.
The tone of Lewis's voice did not match the smile plastered on his face. Aramis, however, did not notice this, as he was transfixed by the sparkling eyes of the youngest Avedon child.
You're the man who's going to find out who killed our Greta. Thank you.
She extended her hand in gratitude, her smile beaming like the sun. It has been years since I have seen such a smile, such a mark. Aramis realized the priests of Cairn would likely claim the light in Julian's eyes as the touch of Iberian. To Aramis, the light was the sign of something else altogether. You are welcome, young miss. Julian's eyes never lost direct contact with Aramis's own.
Do you need anything from me? I want to help, but I don't know anyone that would hurt Miss Greta.
Aramis certainly had questions for the young Avedon, but none of them were tied to this investigation. Julian's eyes had suddenly become a conduit for Aramis, pulling him deep inside the young girl. This event was remarkably different than the power he used to truth read or mind walk. In this case, Aramis felt more than saw. Warmth, power, and love converging and coursing through Julianne. Some clerics in the Priests of Cairn claimed to have this power, calling it soul-searching. Those that possessed this power but were not a follower of Iberian were vilified by the Priests of Cairn as charlatans and sorcerers. In truth, Aramis knew of only one priest of Cairn that ever possessed this ability. Soul-searching seemed to manifest itself more often in Aaronic advisors, which pained the followers of Iberian to no end. Aramis felt Aaron touch his shoulder. From the confused look on Julian's face, Aramis had certainly been silent for an inappropriate amount of time. I am sorry, Miss Julianne. I am afraid this has been a long day already. If you think of anything out of the ordinary that you may have seen or heard over the last few months, even if it had nothing directly to do with Greta, please tell Constable Lewis. He can pass it along to us. Julianne crinkled her nose.
Is my father scaring you, Sir Aramis?
Constable Lewis laughed.
I'm sure your father has tried to strike fear in our visitors. You'll find these two gentlemen are not so easily scared, my dear. Come along, Julianne. Your riding lesson awaits.
Julianne smiled.
My brother John is finally teaching me how to jump.
Lewis put his arm around Julianne's shoulder and led her away.
I'll come find you if I learn anything new, Sir Aramis.
What exactly happened back there, Aramis? Aaron asked as they walked to the entrance of the manor. Aramis weighed how much he wanted to tell his student, as it would open himself up to several questions he could not yet answer. You know that during my time as a member of the Aaronic Order, that certain powers manifested themselves in me. Whether it is the will of Aj and his children, or from becoming more attuned to the land itself, I have certain abilities that most do not possess. Some of these powers are called. My attempts at truth-reading, not as strong as some in the Order, are linked to my concentration. It is an active event. But other powers, such as what you just witnessed, those I do not control. Aramis continued. Let me ask you this, Aaron. When you looked at Julianne Avedon, what did you notice? Aaron thought for a moment. She is bright, engaging. She has a commanding relationship with Constable Lewis, even though it was he that led her around. Aramis nodded. Good. What else?
She seems honest, and I'm sure her smile lights up whatever room she is in.
Yes, truly. Aramis stopped before the door of the manor. To their left was the entrance to the Olviarn Pass. The guard station was empty. The gate didn't need constant supervision since Lord Avedon had closed the pass. Aramis knew that within the guard station was a complex mechanism that controlled the massive gates to the pass. Not that they wanted to escape Avedon Hill, but Aramis knew that any mistake at working the gate's mechanism would cause an alarm to sound. He paused to finish their conversation before entering the manor. Certain people have a presence about them. To most, it would appear that these people glow or light up the room. A very small number of these people are truly special. Some would say they have a destiny so ingrained in them that others can sense it without understanding its meaning. These few possess what the Aaronic Order calls the Mark of Aj. The priests of Cairn call it the Mark of Iberian, but that is another story. In any case, I have the ability to sense this mark in people. Aaron was confused. What does this mark mean? It means that Julian Avedon has an intended purpose in this world. What that is, I have no idea. But it could mean a great many different things. That she will help people. That she will one day change how things work in Avedon Hill. Or maybe she will become the first female priest in the Priest of Cairn, as John stated is her intention. All I know is she has the potential to become someone very special. Aaron started to pull open the manor's front door, but Aramis placed a hand over his. Aaron, this sense is not an ability that one can gain through training. It is a power that is simply part of someone. While I have sensed the Mark of Aj in several people over the years, only once have I sensed it as strongly as I did today. Only once. Yes. The day I met your mother. Aaron could only stand and watch as Aramis pushed open the door and entered Avedon Manor.
He did it again. Another piece of the puzzle that is my family, dangled before me like a carrot leading a horse.
Aaron frowned and then followed Aramis through the door. The two men proceeded through the manor without incident and reached their destination, the manor kitchen. They found Chef Roland and asked him about Kieran's new hobby.
Cairn Avedon? Cooking? I don't think so, Sir Aramis.
Chef Roland stood with hands on hips, looking very amused. His son, Lee Nallon, stood in the corner with the mop, laughing.
Don't get us wrong, Sir Aramis. We love Miss Cairn. She's very nice, and always very nice to us. But Miss Cairn knows as much about working in a kitchen as I do about shoeing a horse. Which would be nothing, by the way.
Maybe she is trying to keep it a secret. As a surprise, Aaron offered. Chef Roland shook his head from side to side.
If she's learning how to cook, it's not in this kitchen. And if she is trying to learn, she would have consulted me. I've pulled all of those kids into the kitchen over the years, and none of them has shown even the slightest interest in cooking.
Aramis nodded. Thank you, Roland. Please do not mention to Lord Avedon that we spoke to you about this.
Spoke to Roland about what?
Lord Avedon had entered the kitchens and was standing behind Aramis and Aaron. Aramis cursed himself silently for placing his back to the main entry to the room. Aramis slowly turned to face Lord Avedon. Aaron, however, spoke first. We were asking Chef Roland for his best Oviar and whitetail dish. Talik Bor claims his venison stew is the best in the region. We were giving Roland here a chance to prove him wrong. Lord Avedon blinked once, stared at the blank look on Chef Roland's face, and then exploded.
You waste time asking my employees questions about food?
Aaron continued, knowing Aramis would not lie to Lord Avedon. He, however, had no such qualms. We were following up on some questions about Greta's eating habits around the time of her death. Lord Avedon stood, shoulders moving up and down as he breathed heavily. Aramis nodded to Aaron, and they both bowed slightly to Lord Avedon and moved to leave the kitchen. Lord Avedon stuck out his arm to prevent Aramis from passing. Aramis slid effortlessly to the side, avoiding contact without making a move that could be considered aggressive. Lord Avedon's face had reddened.
I'm beginning to think I made a mistake about you.
Aramis did not stand down.
You have placed restrictions on our investigation, Lord Avedon.
I am abiding these restrictions as well as possible, but you need to understand that at this point, I am here to solve a murder. I no longer care about obtaining safe passage through your mountains. I will succeed at this. How quickly and how efficiently I succeed depends greatly on how much you continue to impede my investigation.
Impede?
Lord Avedon waved a finger at the monk.
How about you give me something right now, or I will lead the procession of constables as they haul you and your servant out of my town. Show me that you deserve to stay here. Something to prove that you are not simply here to add to my grief.
Where are the books?
What?
The books. The ledgers that Greta used to track monies, to record the taxes and tariffs levied on those who traveled through the pass. Where are they?
That is none of your business, monk.
You cannot tell me, because you have no idea where they are. Lord Avedon raised an eyebrow, taken aback by the monk's words. He whirled, the purple cloak he wore spinning around him. He exited the kitchen and walked into the grand hall. Aramis followed, flashing a sign to Aaron, ordering him to stay back out of earshot. Once they had reached the great round table in the grand hall, Lord Avedon turned and faced Aramis. But it was Aramis that spoke first. Lord Avedon, I do not care how much gold you have or what secrets you and Greta Platt shared. What I do know is that you not only lost a house mistress, you lost what is required to keep this town running smoothly. I believe you do not even know if Greta's books are simply hidden or if they were taken by someone, presumably her murderer. Lord Avedon's anger melted away. Overtaken by the same defeat Aramis had seen in Lord Avedon the day before.
You are correct. No one, not even her mother, can tell for sure if the town ledgers are simply missing or have been stolen.
So this is why you do not believe this is a vampire killing. You think this is about your gold.
No vampire murdered Greta. I'm sure of that.
What makes you so sure? Lord Avedon paused and blinked twice, lost in thought.
Just continue your investigation, Aramis Cragen.
Lord Avedon turned and exited the grand hall, leaving Aramis and Aaron to contemplate their next move.
Chapter 19, The King's Crown. The icon of Iruna, the child of nobility. For riches do not endure, and a crown is never secure. Tales of the Children.
Aramis Cragen pulled out his journal and began reading the notes he had written over the last 2 days. He motioned for Aaron to join him at the table. Other than a single guard who stood on the opposite side of the opening to the hall, no one was nearby, as far as Aramis could tell. Even so, Aramis kept his voice low. Aaron, I believe I missed something very important. He stared down at the page before him once more. While Lord Avedon's admission should have sent Aramis down the path he had already started on, it did the exact opposite. His notes did not lie. Aramis, what in Aja's name are you talking about?
The king's head moth.
Aramis could tell that Aaron wanted to cry out in frustration. Aramis had refused, time and time again, to concentrate on the possibility that a vampire had killed Greta Platt. Now, he was talking about the search for a moth that had earned them entry into the manor the day before. King's Head Moth? What about it? Besides, we were only able to get Marissa a King's Head Caterpillar. Yes, but we now know that Marissa is being compelled to work without rest to create a potion, most likely for the Avedons. And right now she is attempting to subvert the laws of nature, forcing this caterpillar to transform into a moth months before it should ever happen. What I saw at Marissa's shop makes me believe that, yes. Well, when we searched the library for information on the King's Head moth, we only examined the ones on animals. Of course, we were looking for where they might live. Exactly. Come on. Aramis nearly jumped out of his chair. He pulled Aaron up by the shoulder and hurried him towards the front of the manor. Where are we going now? Back to the library, of course. By the time they walked into the library, it was nearly dusk. Aramis didn't mind, because if he was right, their next destination would require the cover of night. Lane was surprised to see the two men.
Back again. I'm starting to think you like me, Sir Monk.
The playful tone of Lane's voice was as engaging as everything else about her, but Aramis was able to keep his focus, even with Aaron snickering behind him. He bowed slightly.
Ma'am, sorry to bother you so near the end of your day, but we need a particular book I am sure you have in your collection.
Lane's eyes lit up as they always did when books were the topic of discussion.
Of course, Sir Aramis. What is it you need?
Do you have a copy of Lapin's Codex?
For a brief moment, Aramis thought he might have seen something, a slight tightening of the muscles around Lane's eyes, but it was gone before he could even be certain of what he had seen. The librarian grinned.
A copy? My dear brother of Aaron, I have the original manuscript.
Aramis could hardly believe his ears. As Lane walked down the stairs from the entryway landing to where she kept the more valuable books in her collection, Aramis turned to Aaron.
The actual codex. Did you hear that?
Aaron had heard, but obviously didn't understand his mentor's delight.
Lapin, wasn't he a heretic?
Aramis frowned.
Does your family no longer hire competent teachers? Yes, Lapin was branded as a heretic by the priest of Cairn. It was a time in Cairn's history when the followers of Iberian openly attempted to become more powerful than the three provinces of Cairn. But before being named as a heretic, Lapin Janes was one of the most respected alchemists in all of Cairn.
They walked to the table where Aramis had previously read through Aubrey Avedon's journal.
Alchemist, you referred to Marissa as a doctor. Is this the same thing? Doctor is the term used for those who try to hide their predilection for magic by taking up a more accepted professions like charm crafting and potion making. Lapin Janes was an alchemist. He dedicated his life studying the elements that make up the world. Combining the essences of different items can sometimes produce something new, whether it be potions, salves, even the spirits we love. He cataloged what he and many others had learned over hundreds of years into what was called Lapin's Codex.
Is it a guide to potions?
In some ways, the Codex is a list of ingredients, agents, reagents, and explanations of what they are used for and in.
So the priest of Cairn branded him a heretic because he used magic?
That was their charge. And even if you can look past the fact that equating magic use to heresy is incomprehensible to anyone with even a basic understanding of how magic is connected to Aj, Lapin should not have been branded a heretic even by those terms. Alchemy does not have anything to do with magic. Lapin Janes could not dip from the river of magic any more than Cousin Red can. He only understood, better than anyone, how the elements that make up our world can be used to create new, powerful things.
Then why was he killed?
Because three generations ago, the leadership of the priest of Cairn had an agenda that relied heavily on the fears of the common people. Fear of the monsters that had come through the Great Rift and that could one day come again. Fear of the prophecies of Iberian. And most importantly, the growing fear of any form of magic other than that granted to clerics by Aj and his children. They accused Lapin of sorcery. Even though his whole life had been devoted to helping people and to the study of the nature of our world, no one stepped forward to speak on Lapin's behalf for fear of their own lives.
As she had the day before, Lane had re-entered the room without either of them noticing. She placed one of the largest tomes Aaron had ever seen on the table in front of Aramis, and finished his thought.
They suspended Lapin in a tree for 3 days. Remarkably, he was still alive on the third day. So they burned both him and the tree to the ground, calling it the will of Iberion.
How in the world did the priests of Cairn even survive as a group? From everything you have taught me, they've done little more than cause terror and fear. Lane Nichols spoke as she left them at the table.
History usually shows that no group is completely good or evil, young sir. Even their Ronic advisors had their share of problems during those years, wouldn't you say, Sir Aramis?
Yes, that was a dark time for most everyone in some way. He turned to face the librarian. Please, before you go, there's something I need to ask you. Lane turned back and faced the table.
Where was I the night Greta Platt was murdered? I'm sure Constable Lewis told you. I was not there in the town and could not have possibly been at the manor during that time.
Yes, his notes show you were out of town on business that night. I just wanted you to tell me what went on that night in your own words.
I left that evening just past sundown to meet one of my contacts from Dolmentir. He had sent me a message stating that he had one of the first copies of the autobiography of Arlen Grisha.
Arlen Grisha, the one-time governor of Tax, was one of the only members of the Council of Grosh that had ever revealed their identity to the world, a fact that had gotten him killed less than a year after the event. A scrivener's copy of his autobiography would be quite an addition to Lane's collection. Do you often meet contacts at night? Lane nodded.
Not necessarily at night, but I often meet my book dealers at the crossroads of Osykes, west of Avedon Hill. Some of my contacts travel from Haven to the cities along the southern coast. Meeting them at the crossroads is the only way I can trade with them. Rarely do booksellers come through the pass.
This made sense to Aramis, since written texts were scarce in Grosh, a province more known for its history of oral tradition. Were you able to get the autobiography?
Alas, no. My contact did not show. He had never missed an appointment with me before. I still do not know what happened. I made it back to Avedon Hill just before dawn. I'm sure Cletus can verify that for you.
Thank you. Lane bowed her head slightly to both men, and then left the room to give them privacy. And back to your question, young Aaron. The priests of Cairn had questionable leadership for years, to say the least, and they still play on the fears of the common man too often for my taste. But thankfully, they are a much more enlightened group, both organizationally and spiritually, than they were 30 years ago. Aramis used a finger to stroke the edge of the codex as if it were some sort of religious artifact. He opened the collection of loose parchments and began reading. Aaron sat in his chair, patiently waiting. The first pangs of hunger crept into his thoughts. Maybe I should pull out an apple.
Aha!
Aramis pointed his finger at a page in front of him.
I should have known.
Aaron, shaken from his thoughts of food, attempted to read the words on the page. He made out King's Crown, but not much else. Aramis, what is it?
Let us go.
Aramis quickly gathered the parchments, folding them neatly and placing them into the pockets from whence they had come. Aramis placed the codex on the counter and ran his fingers across the spine of the book one last time, marveling at the workmanship of the tome. He pulled away, though, focusing at the task at hand. They did not wait to pay their respects to Lane. Instead, they exited the library and started down the path leading east.
The King's Head Moth. It is the main component of the King's Crown Potion. Have you ever heard of it?
Aaron increased his pace in order to keep up with Aramis.
No, sir, I haven't. I did not make the connection when Marissa... I am obviously getting too old for this.
Aaron ignored Aramis's remark.
The King's Crown Potion, it has to do with vampirism. Specifically saving someone from it.
What? How?
While most feel that vampirism is the result of demonic forces at work, some feel that vampirism is a disease. The King's Crown Potion is no more than a legend, really. Lapin recorded it in his codex because it was a possible use for the King's Head Moth. What does it do? As you have heard, a victim of a vampire attack, if killed, rises in 3 days. It's not technically alive. It's known as undead. Which is what might have happened to Greta Platt, since her corpse has disappeared. Aramis could not deny that point. Well, most believe that once a corpse has risen, it has become a vampire as well. But a few believe that there is a second part to this transformation, that until a risen corpse has tasted the blood of a human victim, these few believe that the person can be saved.
Saved?
Yes, the King's Crown potion is rumored to be able to reverse the transformation of a vampire.
And what if the vampire has already tasted human blood?
Ah, there is the rub. If a vampire that has taken human victim drinks a King's Crown potion, that vampire will become even more powerful, supposedly inheriting the strength of 10.
And you think that Marissa is creating a King's Crown potion for Lord Avedon?
Yes, I do. Aaron noticed that they were not going to the manor gate, but had continued east towards the stables. The sun had set, and the moon had yet to rise. It was very dark, yet Aramis had his notebook out and was looking at something very closely.
So where are we going? The manor is in that direction.
To the manor, but just not through the front door, young prince. Do you believe Lord Avedon will be excited to hear about our discovery?
No, of course not.
Well, that is why we must enter the manor from a different direction. I just don't know what voice will work for Alberon.
Oberon.
Oberon.
Oberon. See, you're going to have to polish your voice for this. Chasing the Bard is, after all, an epic fantasy from award-nominated author Philippa Ballantyne. There's dark magic at work, court intrigue of the Fae, and Will Shakespeare caught in the middle of it all.
Okay, how about this? Oh, God, but I do love being king.
Way too O'Toole.
If it weren't for you, Mufasa would still be alive.
Way too Jeremy Irons.
Ah, forget it. I'll do my own voice. Pip said that's why she picked me.
Sure. Oberon is king of the fairies, after all.
Yeah. Hey, wait a second, Morris.
Chasing the Bard. William Shakespeare in his own Midsummer Nightmare. And if I'm not careful, my own. Find out more at chasingthebard.com. Now, boys, behave, or I will be greatly displeased.
They tap into your bloodstream like tiny little vampires. They hack into your nervous system like you were a walking computer network built just for them. They flood your body with chemicals that cause fear, paranoia, and psychotic rage. It's a disease that thinks. It's a disease that talks. And if you're lucky, you die before it becomes a disease that walks. On April Fool's Day, experience the horror thriller novel Infected, the major hardcover release from number one bestselling author Scott Sigler, creator of the free podcast novels Earthcore, Ancestor, and Nocturnal. Available April 1st, online and in bookstores everywhere. Free audio chapters of Infected are available at scottsigler.com and infectednovel.com. The disease kills you slowly if the cure doesn't kill you first.
Once upon a time. No, scratch that. It was a dark and stormy night. No. It wasn't until I stumbled over its dead body that it reached up and grabbed me. Yeah, I like that. That's a good beginning. Now I need a supernatural sidekick who's good at cracking jokes, a few friends who can explain the do's and don'ts of magic, an evil villain with a maniacal plan, and a modern setting where havoc can ensue and we'll have a hell of an urban fantasy. No, seriously, guys, I'm not advocating a formula, but I am encouraging you to listen to my podcast, Tale Chasing, for writers and readers of urban fantasy. We'll talk about all things demon, angel, vampire, werewolf, ghost. Oh, hell, we'll just talk about anything supernatural. How to write it, how to critique it. We'll talk to the authors who keep us buying their series, and my own little demented world in which I hammer out my place on the sci-fi fantasy shelf in the bookstore. So come and listen and participate if the mood strikes at tailchasing.com. Tail, like a story, not the one on a cute work hat. Okay, so the dead body grabs her and then she...
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, a podcast novel written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Most of the music in this podcast generously provided by Shira Common through Magnatune.com. Magnatune.com, they are not evil. Additional music generously provided by Kevin McLeod through his website at incompetech.com. Be sure to check out Murder at Avedon Hill at podiobooks.com, and if you are so inclined, please post a review at iTunes, at Podcast Pickle, or at podiobooks.com. Audio comments about the podcast can be left on the Cairn line at 704-315-5884. Or go to pgholyfield.com and click on the Call Me button to leave comments. This podcast is copyright 2007-2008 by P.G. Holyfield and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license.